the beggar. Next morning, after the lightest of breakfasts, Telemachus announced that he was going to the palace to see his mother. He turned to Odysseus. "Want to join me, old man?"
"You're very kind, sir. I would like to go to the town and beg there. More opportunity than in the countryside. I don't want to stay here and be a burden to our friend Eumaeus, who's been so good to me. You go on ahead, though. You're young and vigorous. I dare say my slow steps will hold you back. Besides, the frost will nip me through my thin clothes if I go now. I'll wait till the sun is further up in the sky. Maybe my host will be kind enough to accompany me then."
After insisting that there was no way so charming and well-mannered a guest could ever be considered a burden, Eumaeus said that he nonetheless would be delighted to show him the way into town whenever he felt ready to go. When Eumaeus wasn't looking, father and son poked their tongues out at each other and grinned. On his way through the town, Telemachus stopped by the house of Clitius to pick up Theoclymenus, the seer from Argos. At the palace, Penelope was, of course, overjoyed to see her son. Eurycleia, Telemachus's old nurse, was in the room too. They came close to fighting each other over who was to hug Telemachus the longer and tighter. Penelope insisted, as mothers do, that before anything else, Telemachus and his guest, Theoclymenus, should sit down and eat. "Where did you go? Whom did you see? What news in Pylos? Any news? Dare I ask?" Between mouthfuls, Telemachus told of his visit to Nestor and subsequent journey to Sparta to see Menelaus and Helen. When he reached the part where Menelaus described what the old man of the sea had said, that Odysseus was on Ogygia, held captive by Calypso, but certainly and definitively alive, Penelope could not hold back her tears. "I don't know whether the hope is worse than the dread. If he truly can be alive after all this time."
"Madam," said Theoclymenus, "you will forgive me for introducing the complication of new hope. But Apollo gave me the gift of foresight, and it is my duty to share it when I am able. I swear, in the name of Zeus, that your husband is alive. Furthermore, he is already in Ithaca. He will soon be here in this palace to reclaim his home, hearth, and kingdom, and to revenge himself on the suitors who have dared to beleaguer you. I have seen it."
Penelope looked long and hard at him.
"You will understand if I say that the last 20 years have made me doubtful. You seem to be an honest man. My son likes and respects you, and I don't doubt you mean well. I pray that you are right, but I will say no more than that."
Theoclymenus bowed. "Lady, I understand. Retain those doubts. It is the wisest course." A clamour rose up outside the window.
"What is it?"
Telemachus looked down.
"It's nothing. The suitors have started a discus and javelin throwing competition."
He watched for a while, and then, in a lower voice, he hissed down to the laughing suitors,
"Enjoy yourselves while you can, my friends. It won't be long now. It won't be long."
At around the same time, Odysseus and Eumaeus were leaving the swineherd's hut. Odysseus accented his foul rags with a filthy knapsack and a cloak so full of holes that Eumaeus joked that when they got to town he could sell it as a fishing net. As they approached the fringes of the city, Eumaeus pointed proudly to an elaborately carved stone basin out of which spring water bubbled for public use.
"This fountain was installed by Ithacus himself."
"Oi, Ogface, stay away from that water. You'll contaminate it with your pig shit smell."
Odysseus and Eumaeus turned. A man was driving a herd of white goats towards them. Eumaeus whispered into Odysseus's ear. Melanthius, he's mean, pay no attention.
And what have we here?
Melanthius looked Odysseus up and down, then made a great show of holding his nose.
You stink worse than Hogface. Who the hell are you?
Just a stranger hoping to be looked on kindly in the palace, said Odysseus mildly.
Another filthy freeloading beggar. Wait till Iris sees you. That's all I say. Wait till Iris sees you.
This thought seemed to amuse the goatherd the more and more he repeated it. Odysseus and Eumaeus left him to water his flock.
What an unpleasant man, said Odysseus. What did he mean by wait till Iris sees you?
No, I'm not sure, but I do think you should be careful, my friend. There's the palace. But why not try your luck elsewhere?
Odysseus looked up at the gates and the courtyard beyond.
Beautiful, he said. Fine proportions. Whoever designed and built this knew what they were doing.
You're a good judge, friend. It was my master, Odysseus himself, every brick and tile. Not bad, eh?
The smell of roast meat came to their nostrils, and the sound of music and raucous laughter to their ears.
You go in ahead, said Odysseus. No need for everyone to associate you with a wretched old beggar.
Just be careful, Eumaeus said. They'll as happily throw a spear at you as a stone or a footstool.
Don't you worry, dear friend. I'm used to it.
Eumaeus went in. Odysseus made to follow, but as he neared the gate himself, he heard a strange whining noise. On a pile of old bones, dung, and litter, an ancient and emaciated dog lay panting, its fur ravaged by mange and ticks. It strained up towards Odysseus, flattened its ears, and gave a feeble wag of the tail. It was all Odysseus could do not to cry out. He knew Argus at once, his favourite hound. He had last seen him, barely out of puppyhood, howling woefully on the quayside 20 years ago, when his master departed for Troy. That had been Odysseus's last image of home as his ship left harbour. Telemachus in his mother's arms, Argus leaping and yowling, Penelope trying not to weep. Odysseus dropped his hand to stroke him. Argus lifted his head and whimpered with joy. His 20-year wait was over. He and his master were reunited. A shiver ran through him. He gave a low growl and died.
Odysseus knew that he could not enter the palace in tears. With as great an effort of self-control as any he had ever needed to summon, he breathed in and out, and pulled himself together. Then, lowering himself back down to a beggar's stoop, he turned the heavy bronze ring on the gate and entered his palace. A wall of sound hit him as he entered the great hall. Two competing musicians held different corners and sang clashing songs. Stewards, pages, and serving girls raced around, trying to satisfy the loud demands of the suitors, who roared for more wine, more meat, more music, more everything. The sight of Odysseus, old, bent, and dressed in the filthiest of rags, caused a great cheer of ironic welcome from the suitors.
Here's sport!
First, an apple was thrown. then a bronze plate. Odysseus dodged them both. Antinous stood up. "I'll want a silver coin from you each if I hit the mark." With that, he picked up a wooden stool and hurled it towards Odysseus, striking him hard on the hip. Odysseus stood firm. The stool could have been made of straw, for all the effect it seemed to have had on him. Perhaps it would have been better if he had shown some pain, for the other suitors now mocked Antinous for possessing a poor throwing arm and began to fling more stools at Odysseus, who was forced, greatly to their delight, to hide under the table. Telemachus had promised his father he wouldn't interfere, but this was more than he could stand.
"Have you no manners? No breeding?" he yelled at the suitors. "Damn you for the wild dogs you are! Strangers are sacred to Zeus, didn't you know that? Whether beggars or kings, visitors have always been welcome here. Shame on you! Shame!"
"Ooh, shame," he says, cheeky runt. "Who does he think he is, the sanctimonious prig? Let's teach the brat a lesson."
Odysseus scrambled out from his hiding place, grinning feebly.
"The gentlemen will have their fun," he said.
He approached the suitors' tables with his knapsack open, anything to distract their attention away from Telemachus.
"All scraps welcome, my noble lords."
Some of the suitors kicked him viciously away, while others took great pleasure in stuffing his knapsack so full of apple cores and bones that, already flimsy, it gave way at the seams and burst open. The howls of laughter that greeted the sight of Odysseus rushing around, trying to pick up the rotting remnants that rolled around on the flagstones, were suddenly cut short. A man, dressed all in rags, had entered the hall. He froze at the sight of Odysseus.
"Well, well," cried Antinous, "looks like we have a face-off."
The newcomer eyed Odysseus with open malice. His tattered clothes were somehow of a finer quality, richer and better stitched than those of Odysseus, and his belly was certainly rounder and fuller. Odysseus was the real thing. This interloper looked like the kind of theatrical beggar you might see in a pageant or play. He walked around Odysseus, curling his lip in the manner of a suspicious buyer inspecting a doubtful horse.
"And just what the hell does this think it is?" "Ooh, stranger, you've antagonized Iris," said Antinous. "You didn't want to do that."
"We call him Iris on account of he'll run messages for us," said Eurymachus.
Iris would be the masculine form of Iris, the goddess who runs across her rainbow bridge carrying messages from the gods. According to Homer, the beggar's real name was Arnaeus.
"I'm just a poor derelict like you," said Odysseus, "throwing myself on the mercy of these kindly lords."
"Like me? Like me? I'm the town beggar, famed and respected throughout Ithaca. You are a vile, smelly, withered old vagrant. You are less than the shit beneath my sandals. Out you get."
Iris jerked his thumb towards the great doorway.
"There's room here for both of us," said Odysseus.
His tone was mild and conciliatory.
"Surely no need for us to come to blows."
Iris sneered.
"You snivelling little coward. Last chance. Which would you rather, find yourself outside the gate, still as you are now, or outside the gate with a split nose? Simple choice."
Eurymachus started beating the table with his fists, roaring for a fight. The others soon joined in, banging their plates and wine cups and drumming their feet on the ground.
This is too good, cried Antinous. Let's have a proper scrap. Winner to be feasted by us at table. All they can eat and drink.
A roaring chorus started up to the rhythm of the thumps on the table.
Battle of the beggars! Battle of the beggars!
Odysseus put up his hand.
Great sirs! I know what a pathetic figure I cut, and I dare say I'll be beaten to a pulp by this superior person.
Iris thumped Odysseus heartily on the back.
That's certainly the plan, old boy.
All I'm asking, Odysseus went on in a pleading tone, is that none of you intervene. It'll be hard enough for me to stay on my own two feet without one of you thinking it funny to trip me up. Do you all promise not to cut in?
Telemachus spoke up. Don't worry, sir. I'll see fair play.
Thank you, young man, whoever you are, said Odysseus.
Telemachus tried not to smile. A space was cleared. A smirking Iris warmed up by skipping around the hall, nodding grandly at the onlookers. Odysseus threw off his cloak and gathered up his ragged tunic, tucking it into his underclothes. Athena had paid great attention to his sparse grey hair, the white streaks in his beard, the scrawny arms and aged face, but it seemed that she forgot to match the rest of Odysseus's physique to this wretched assembly. Stripped to the waist, a quite remarkably imposing frame was revealed, broad shoulders, a barrel chest, and the most astonishingly muscular thighs. Iris skidded to a halt and gulped. Odysseus kicked off his sandals and stamped his left foot on the floor and then his right. Iris froze. Odysseus smiled. The suitors began to catcall. Antinous stood up and yelled at Iris.
Who's the snivelling little coward now? Don't you dare stand there, trembling like a frightened whelp. You let this miserable old man defeat you, and I'll send you to King Hecatus, the master torturer. If you're lucky, all he'll do is slice off your nose and ears, rip off your balls, and feed them to his dogs.
Odysseus considered. Should he kill Iris with one swift, hard blow to the throat? It would be easy enough. On the other hand, it might arouse suspicion. It was vital for his future plans that the suitors all thought him of no account. Iris came forward, arms windmilling wildly. Odysseus skipped to one side, making his move look more like a frightened leap, and then sent out one precise punch. To the spectators, it looked like a desperate and lucky fling of the fist, but an expert at hand-to-hand fighting would have recognized the exquisitely timed jab of a master. It crashed into the side of Iris's face, smashing his nose and his jaw together. Blood poured from him, and he fell, coughing and yelping, to the floor. Odysseus grabbed him by the legs and dragged him from the hall, dipping little grateful bows at the cheers that came his way. Once outside, he shoved Iris along the ground, propped him against the wall, and thrust a staff into his hand. "Here is your begging post now," he snarled into his ruined face. "You ever try to set yourself up above other beggars, and worse will come to you. Understood?" Iris gargled. Blood bubbled from his mouth, but no sound emerged. "Nod, then." Iris nodded and winced at the fierce shot of pain it sent through him. Odysseus was greeted on his return by a barrage of fruit and bread. Amphinomus clapped him on the shoulders and led him to a plate of goat sausages. "Your reward, old man." Odysseus was grateful that Eurymachus was now calling for bards, dice, music, and dancing. It took the attention away from him. Telemachus came down the stairs and approached his father, speaking low while looking away. "I have just visited Mother. She has heard about this strange new beggar. She's ashamed of the treatment you received and intrigued by reports of your way with words and fists. She'd like you to go up. She has gifts for you." Although his heart leapt with joy at the thought of being reunited with Penelope, Odysseus knew that this was not the time. "I'll go up, but I won't reveal myself to her. I don't want to burden her with having to keep the secret." Telemachus nodded. "Whatever you think best. Also, she knows that you've travelled the world and hopes that you might have news of, well, of you. But she doesn't know you're you, of course. She means news of, well, you know what I mean." Odysseus smiled. "Indeed I do. Just because you can't express yourself properly, it doesn't mean I can't understand what you're trying to say." Thanks, I think. Come." Telemachus led the way upstairs. "She knows you will likely want to be bathed before meeting her." He pointed to a closed door. Odysseus leaned close to Telemachus and whispered to him, "Now is the time. They're getting drunk and they're singing. Take only those you absolutely trust and quickly remove all the weapons from the walls. Bring them to one of the storerooms and lock them up there. But make sure there's a sword, a spear, and a shield each for both of us leaning up in a dark corner in the hall. Somewhere we can get to quickly before anyone else sees them. Make sense?" Telemachus breathed in deeply and nodded. "Makes sense. But what shall I say if they challenge me? They're certain to ask me what the hell I think I'm doing." Tell them that Penelope instructed you to take the weapons down to be cleaned and polished. She'll be getting married soon, she realizes, and the palace should look perfect for her wedding. They'll be so excited by the idea she might be coming close to choosing one of them that they won't think too hard about the implications of the weapons being removed." Telemachus shook his head in wonder. "You really are as wily as your reputation proclaims. Hate that word. What's wrong with brilliant or imaginative?" Telemachus laughed and slipped away. Odysseus opened the door and stepped into the room. An old woman was sitting on a stool, dropping scented oil into a steaming bowl of hot water. She looked up and smiled. "Come in, sir. Come in. Don't be afraid." Odysseus almost shouted out. It was Eurycleia, his childhood nurse.